Ahoy, hoy! Welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I'm Tyson Ferris.
And I'm Jeremy Sternhagen.
And today we're talking about Duel.
Duel.
The prequel to Jaws.
Yes.
In our opinion.
And we're not the only ones who have that opinion.
Even Mr. Spielberg himself, I believe, has that opinion.
Yeah. So.
But we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Have you seen this movie before?
I have. I saw this very very early in my Spielberg,
like
getting into, when I realized there were directors and you could watch all of their stuff.
Yeah.
Which happened very early for me, like probably around 8 or 9, mm-hmm. 10 years old, I started doing that and never stopped, really. Yeah, looking into directors and stuff, I found Duel like pretty quickly in his filmography. So like I'd say it was in the late 80s I probably found it, early 90s.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you bring up finding out that directors, like as soon as you put the dots together that like, oh, that director did that. If I have told the story before, I apologize, but it's funny that you mentioned that because you know how so many people love bands, they love music, and like, well, of course, if you love this Nirvana song, you'll love that Nirvana song. And whenever people would
question, you like Nirvana, you'll like Foo Fighters.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Like there's just this through line in music.
And if you like Foo Fighters, you'll like Queen of the Stone Age. And,
yeah. And that through line, you never have to explain to anybody. But I remember as like a high school student, all of my friends who liked movies but weren't into movies were just baffled that I like it was like a party trick for them to be like, Jeremy can name the director of anything or this, you know, whatever. And to me it was like I was flattered, but it wasn't a trick because I'm just like, well, I like movies. Like you can do that with music, right? You can say like, well, that's by Nirvana and that's by Nirvana. I can watch a movie, like I pay attention to who wrote it, who directed it.
Yeah.
So that was never like a thing. That was never a challenge for me, even though some people just are kind of baffled by that skill.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a skill that, and it does baffle people and I've had the same experience, but, I feel like we're being very self-congratulatory right out of the gates here, but,
I'm not trying to be, I was just like, you brought it up and I'm just like, yeah, like, by the way.
Yeah. No, but this is, I think having that sort of knowledge is like knowing song lyrics.
Yes, that's how I feel.
To kind of know your, to kind of, you know, jump off on your sort of analogy there.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I know a bunch of song lyrics and I also know who like directed a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
And,
maybe the difference is that movies, the whole point of a movie is suspension of disbelief. Like the point is you're not supposed to know all that stuff's going on behind the curtain.
Sure.
Maybe that's the difference. But to bring it back
I've never bought that.
Yeah, me either. But I'm just
a movie can suspend my disbelief even though I absolutely know how they're made. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the most obvious way is that like actor, like everyone knows when you're watching a movie that has Brad Pitt in it, like that's Brad Pitt. That's not whoever he's playing.
He's not in space.
No.
Yeah.
He's not David Mills in Seven. That's not really.
Yeah.
That's Brad Pitt.
Except he really did break his arm. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to bring it back.
There is a little crossover.
So to bring it back to where we are with Spielberg, it's very possible Spielberg is the first director that I went, oh, I know where I first put his name together with another movie, and it was Back to the Future, because Back to the Future started off with, I think, a Steven Spielberg production.
Yeah.
And I remember very clearly a conversation I had
presents.
When I presents, right. I remember very clearly.
Presenter.
Yes. I remember very clearly a conversation I had with a friend who was convinced that Steven Spielberg directed Back to the Future. And I was like, no, he didn't. It's this other guy.
Yeah. He just presented it.
Yes.
To us.
Yes. Steven Spielberg presents Your Childhood.
Yeah.
That's how he is.
Much like Goonies, and there's all kinds of Spielberg presents.
Yeah.
Some better than others, you know. There's Steven Spielberg presents that no one remembers, like Batteries Not Included.
I remember.
I saw it in the theater. Me and too. I think I have not seen it since. So.
Oh, I definitely have.
I believe Jessica Tandy was in that.
Yes. Movie. And yeah. And Hume Cronin.
There you go.
Yep. Okay.
For all you Hume Cronin heads out there. So no further than the Real Joss Minute.
So I first.
Season two.
So I asked you when you first saw Duel. I know I first saw it in the early 90s when there was, I think, a reprinting on VHS. And it was very clearly marketed on the cover as like Steven Spielberg. They were cashing in like the VHS cover.
Oh, yeah. Was like, Spielberg's first movie.
Yeah.
Yep. Which it very much is.
Yep. And I went into it. Probably with high expectations, and
it does not disappoint.
It did not disappoint me.
Yeah.
So you like Duel?
I love Duel.
I love Duel.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
It is an easy 90 minutes.
That is exactly. A friend of mine, actually previous guest of Jaws Minute, Brian Strahan. I told him we were watching Duel this week, and he's like, "Oh, I've never seen that." And I said, "You should watch it. It's an easy 90 minutes." That was my like. Set him up for it. I don't know if he's seen it yet, but that was my pitch to him. It's like, it's a very easy watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it here.
Yeah.
So it starts off with this point of view shot of the car
mm-hmm.
leaving. And my understanding is this was all added in later mm-hmm. for the film to pad it.
Yeah, so
I really like it. It's a nice way to kind of just get you through the credits, mm-hmm. get you into the film, and then but it's also I was really struck by, and it's cuz it's probably the movie I've seen most recently that really affected me in a large way, which mm-hmm. is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Anyway, this is not spoilers, but there is diegetic music
mm-hmm.
and radio throughout the picture. People are in cars a lot.
Which
and
Quentin there's Tarantino just radio. Does in a lot of his movies.
Yeah, there's radio and there's just constant radio and music happening
mm-hmm.
in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
This, I don't know, it just struck me. We're going like through LA, almost through mm-hmm. the exact same streets mm-hmm. that they kind of stalk in.
And not too many years removed from when
that and movie takes. Not too many years removed when that movie actually takes place.
So did Tarantino dive to the stock footage pile from Duel to
anyway, fill I don't his know. They out? Just had this kinship that I saw, and mm-hmm. I might be the only one. But anyway, that movie is fresh in my mind. And
I didn't even think of that when I was taking notes. Like, oh, yeah, that's kind of how Reservoir Dogs starts. That's kind of how Pulp Fiction starts. It's literally like the radio is being listened to.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple scenes that were added in for the TV version, and we'll get into those later. But yeah, this is definitely one of them. And I'll just say this up front, all the scenes they added in to pad the movie out, to bring it from TV edit to theater edit, I like all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't, none of it stands out. None of it feels weird.
Yeah, yeah, totally. To start off, so the radio sets up an underlying theme of the movie.
Yeah. Basically tees up the entire premise of the movie.
The entire premise of the movie. And it's a theme that we also find in Jaws, coincidentally, mm-hmm. which might be why we're talking about this film.
Oh, interesting. So, tell me more.
And that is of the demasculinized male.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set up with the prank call that the DJ is doing with the census board.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep.
And how he's this, he's not the head of the household. And as soon as this guy starts talking about him not being the man of the house, we immediately see David Mann. Like almost,
oh, yeah,
almost yep. at the same instant that yep. this – shtick that the DJ's doing, we meet our main character, and you mm-hmm. can't help but juxtapose the audio with the person that you're seeing.
Yeah. There's that theme comes up all of his interactions with other people.
And this is much like Brody in Jaws.
Yeah. I was thinking about
we talked about extensively being kind of demasculinized and has to kind of find his masculinity and overcome his fears and, you know, fight the good fight and all
that. Yeah, I have multiple notes about we'll get into this throughout as we talk, but obviously, well, maybe it isn't obvious. David Mann is Brody. He's the one who's just kind of right down the middle, kind of milquetoast guy. Very straight-laced. Not masculine, but he's also kind of a pushover and doesn't want to mess people up too much. But one thing I struggled with, which I think I'm curious to get your thoughts on, is I couldn't decide if the truck is the shark or Brody, or a Quint, sorry.
The truck's the shark.
But I think it's a little bit of Quint, too.
Oh, it could be. Could be.
Anyway, we'll get into that.
Well, maybe the truck driver is Quint.
There you go. I'm with you now. Yay. Yes, that's where I was going. Thank you for, yes.
So, right off, it's all this POV of the car. Then we start getting some wide shots of kind of where we are. We're in the boonies, obviously. Is that a known term? Is that just something?
The boonies?
Yeah.
It is for me.
Oh, okay. Middle of nowhere. I don't know if I'm using a colloquialism with boonies.
But what's interesting is today these filming locations are pretty much the same. Like it's not like suddenly it's like rural. It's not like it's been developed. Because you can, a lot of these filming locations, you can go check them out right now. They look pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little erosion has happened.
But yeah. A little drier.
BFE isn't one we used a lot.
Yep. Too. Yep. You can go
Google that one. Urban Dictionary.
He's out in BFE.
So a great reveal of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these shots that we see like this, the reveal of the truck almost is like, it's like the Star Wars opening shot, but like in reverse.
Is the reveal in the mirror, in his mirror? Is that where we see it first?
We see it first. But then I'm talking about the big pan that goes from the back of his car all the way along the side.
Oh, that's the
all the way along the side of the truck and then to the front of the truck. It's like almost like the Star Wars opening shot with the Star Destroyer, but in reverse.
That's my note. I mean? That is up for a tie as the best shot in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great shot. Yeah. It's Indiana Jones in shadow, you know, after he whips Baraka or whatever in Raiders, you know. It's like it's a great reveal. Yeah. I'm just saying it's like here's our guy.
Yes.
Like, I mean, and he very much presents the truck as a character as much as he presents Dennis Weaver as a character.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean? Yeah.
Or excuse me, David Mann.
David Mann, yes.
Which, by the way, the name, is that a little on the nose for you?
David Mann.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff in this movie, I don't want to make an excuse for the movie, but there are quite a number of moments in this movie where I was thinking like Spielberg is directing this in a way where he knows this movie is ephemeral. You know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Where he, like, this is a TV movie of the week. This is like, people are going to watch it, they're going to eat it up, and then they're never going to see it again. Like, I don't think Spielberg put it out there thinking,
hey, this is going to be my calling card.
This is going to be my calling card. Like, he might have thought, like, this might get me better jobs, but I don't know if he thought Duel would be sitting on Blu-ray.
We're going to be sitting here on a podcast talking about Duel.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also, I think we talked about this a little bit on Jaws, like back then, you know, not until the 80s did people make movies thinking like people are going to watch this over and over and over and over. And Duel was shot in 10 days minus the extra stuff they shot.
Yeah, my understanding was 13 days.
Oh, yeah, 13 days, and then they went back and shot a little bit more.
Which consider one of those days was throwing the truck off the cliff.
That was
that's a whole day.
Yes. So my point being is like, you can tell they like the guerrilla style filmmaking.
Oh, just, there's stuff out of focus.
Oh, yeah.
I have a note.
There's
in here.
So much cheating in this movie.
Yeah.
Which Spielberg has actually discussed at length about how he like, he's just like, here's what I had to do to get it done in 10 days.
Yeah, I have a note here. It's on my second page here. It's when the first chase scene starts. It's mm-hmm. like, I love how messy a lot of these shots are.
Yeah.
Because it just adds a visceralness to the proceedings. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like, we can't even bother to have this in focus, like, but we're going to just show it to you anyway because – God, right. This truck's gonna kill this guy. Like,
no, I love the kineticness of everything.
Yeah, it's very kinetic. It honestly, Duel reminds me the most, not thematically Jaws, mm-hmm. but shooting wise, it reminds me most of Raiders.
I was gonna get to that. Yeah, that yeah. It's like because Raiders is famously the movie that when Spielberg made that, he was coming off the heels of 1941. Which was a very plagued production, and Lucas was
Close Encounters
and Close Encounters,
which went over right. budget and over time and
right.
So and he was known as this guy that just went over budget and over time like right. constantly.
And Lucas was very concerned about that actually, and yeah. Raiders was the movie he had to shoot like guerrilla style.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind next time you're watching Raiders. I bet the Indiana Jones Minute guys talk about this too. But like Raiders of the Lost Ark was shot like.
It's like two takes speed. Tops.
Right. Like yes. Everything you see in Raiders is the first or second
take. It's the first or second take, and that's it. We're moving on. Like,
and it's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's fantastic. And honestly, I think current day Spielberg, in my opinion, could take a note from that and be a little less I think these days he could use a little bit of that. Injected into his bloodstream.
Yeah.
Spielberg. Being a little less precious about things. So,
do you think Spielberg versus Hitchcock? They mm-hmm. both have at this point now pretty extensive filmographies.
Yes.
But both of them have five movies that are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then five movies that are great. And then five movies
that are like meh.
That are, well, they're good.
Yeah.
Like, do either of them have like a bad movie? That's a whole other podcast. But
yeah.
I mean, I think I've said before, like, bad Spielberg is still better than just about everybody else. But I think
they certainly do have bad movies. I mean, in their. In their.
Their whole.
Orv.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying that right.
I haven't seen every Steven Spielberg movie, so I'm not even fully qualified to comment. But yeah, I totally agree with you that like
the only thing I'm missing is very recent ones.
Yeah, and anyway, where I was going with that is I think Hitchcock's worst movies have the same problem. You can tell that like it's like director run amok of too much time, too much money, too much power, and it's all the stuff later in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And you like, do you attribute that to age or do you attribute that to like,
well,
out
you
of
know,
ideas,
that's Tarantino's whole thing is I'm only going to do 10 movies because once you get to a certain age, you just don't make very good movies anymore.
And I disagree with him wholeheartedly.
I do disagree with him as well.
Quentin, if you're listening, but, don't stop.
But also, he does have a point.
True. But he also
can an old director make a really good movie? Absolutely.
Yes.
How many of those movies that he's making in later life are really good movies?
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be the hits and the misses is mm-hmm. gonna be the misses are gonna be outweighing the hits, in my opinion.
You're
as directors get older.
Statistically speaking, you're right. I think the difference is
right.
I think you're right. And yeah. But I think the difference is that Spielberg started making movies like on a lark later in his career. He's like, oh, Hook, that'll be fun. Whee! And he just like, who cares? Like, not everything I make is going to be like a golden goose. Mm-hmm. I want to make Hook. F you. Yeah. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Tarantino's like, everything he does is like if he does the Star Trek movie, that might be different. But
yeah.
But does Tarantino just
I think it'd be hilarious if his 10th movie is a Star – that's what he goes out on
Star
is a Star
Trek
movie.
Part 19 or however. However many Star Trek movies we are by then.
That is nuts. That would be nuts.
But
– and kind of on point
Yeah.
Actually, I do want to put it in here. So in the dual special features, Spielberg talks about, we are 20 minutes into the thing and we are not 5 minutes into the movie.
Well, we skipped over a bunch of notes. I have,
anyway,
I have other stuff.
Anyway, Spielberg talks about, when you're making a movie, you have to be, dead serious about the content of the movie, regardless of how silly it is.
Okay.
And this is him kind of, I think he's post Saving Private Ryan. So he's right in that era.
When this interview was done. Yeah.
So it's like late 90s, early 2000s. Anyway, and I was like, oh man, I wish that Spielberg, I was watching it and I was like, oh, I wish that Spielberg would have talked to the Spielberg that made Crystal Skull.
Oh my dear Lord. I don't think Spielberg, I think he's very aware of what Crystal Skull is and isn't.
But was he taking that movie seriously? Because I don't think he was.
No, I think he.
But Raiders and Temple and Crusade, I think he's taking seriously.
Yes, maybe for Crusade, sure.
Maybe a slightly bit less, but.
Yeah. There's more tongue-in-cheek in Crusade than.
But I still think he's taking the proceedings seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe less so with the librarian and whatnot, but anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still
don't know if that joke works, but yeah.
I liked it. I saw that movie in the theater when I was 10.
But now we're on the Indiana Jones podcast, and that's not why we're here.
You keep trying to get us back on track. We're on track. this is track. Where were we? We were probably talking about.
I had great reveal of the truck.
Oh yeah.
And he picked a red car because he didn't care what the car was. Just make it be red.
Stands
out.
Mm-hmm.
So and I had to mention that because we will see that later where we want things to stand out.
You're
and
telling
be
me that
red.
Spielberg thinks about color, cares about color, and makes decisions about it.
Correct.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to say about that.
Yes, it's true, and it will happen again.
Yes.
I could jump so many.
So my next thing is the truck passes, then passes again.
Mm-hmm.
And like the truck starts this, like he doesn't start it.
No. Well, nothing just like Jaws, nothing the main characters do invite this terror into
this
their
menace.
Lives.
Yeah.
Like it's a bunch of regular people moving about their lives, and then suddenly there is this beast that is going to force them to deal with their sub-elemental problems.
Sure.
Just like Jaws. We have a poltergeist in our recording studio. I know what it was. There's a kid's toy back there that was precariously perched. Edit that out.
And Jeremy's bassy voice just knocked it right down.
Fall down, toy. So this mindless eating machine, I mean driving machine,
mm-hmm.
comes into their lives without passion, without logic. It lives to drive.
Yeah.
It's as though God created the devil and gave him
wheels.
A Peterbilt truck. Yeah, wheels.
This could be called Wheels, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. That would be a better name.
I like Duel.
Yes, it's a good name.
So this Richard Matheson wrote this.
The Duality of Man.
Oh.
What's his name again?
Yeah, David Mann.
Mm-hmm.
The Duality of David Mann.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if this was this literally feels like a lost, like Alfred Hitchcock Presents story.
Yeah, that's my pitch to Brian was like, it's like a Twilight Zone episode or a Hitchcock.
Which Matheson wrote for both of those.
Oh yeah, it's totally, this could have been, I think I have it in my notes, that Richard Matheson, he wrote this short story for Playboy. And Richard Matheson, for those of you that don't know, he wrote I Am Legend, a bunch of Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies, Twilight Zone episodes. So like, this is what he does. And that's exactly, he had pitched it to those anthology shows, mm-hmm. Twilight Zone and whatnot. And none of them made, why in the world it didn't get made? Probably because it would have been expensive.
Well, and they also said it's too small of a conceit. Hmm. It's just a man gets terrorized by a truck is not a show.
Hmm.
And then Spielberg goes and takes it and makes it a feature length film.
What's funny is I've seen a good chunk of the original Twilight Zone episodes, and it would have been
Lazier premises than this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So he wrote it as a short story instead of a TV script, and that's how it got.
Yeah, he originally
up.
Wanted to make it a TV script. No one was mm-hmm. biting on it. So then he made it a short story, sold it to Playboy, and then Spielberg's assistant was reading it.
And Spielberg got a hold of it and then found out who was producing it and just called him up and said.
Which he was shocked that his assistant was reading Playboy magazine. She's like, I like. And she was like, literally, like, I like the articles, you know.
you know, there's, if you Google Playboy stories that got made into movies, it's a long list.
Yeah, Playboy, the fiction section in Playboy is always great.
I wouldn't know
currently, but yeah. Historically.
60s, 70s, 80s. It was like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even the 90s and 2000s when I had a subscription. So, because I was in college and I could. So I did.
So you have Playboy to thank you, Hugh Hefner, for introducing Steven Spielberg to the world.
Yeah.
So it was going to happen sooner or later. Steven Spielberg was not going to be a big director.
Yeah. So then everybody stops at the gas station, not showing, the driver
mm-hmm.
is a lot like not showing the shark, isn't it?
So what if the driver is the shark and the truck is Quint? No, completely. It's the whole,
it's great because it makes the truck become the antagonist and not the guy driving it. Right.
What if it? Do you think the movie, like, I love that the movie remains purposely mysterious
about the
driver.
Don't you always think about it as the truck and not the driver?
Mm-hmm. I think they could have gotten away with never showing the driver, never having him stick out his hand.
I would have liked that even more.
Or what if you just, like, he had, like, gloves on? Like, so you didn't even know
that it was a white guy.
That it's an older white guy. Because you can kind of tell, it's not a young guy. It's, who knows? It could be 40, it could be 60. We know who it is. It's Cary Lofton, stunt driver.
The stunt driver. Yeah.
But at the time, he was, I think, in his 50s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that definitely you could have made, that could have been a good decision to not show him. I'm not complaining. Like that would have been interesting to have him be like.
The amount that they do show him is fine. And actually there's some moments where they actually do need to show him just to make the scene work.
With the hands?
Yeah, like waving him into like oncoming traffic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's some times where it, like, actually.
And that's why I think maybe gloves on just to like. Mm. You know, maybe it's Large March, you know, Ghost. I think that would have been an interesting.
Yeah, long sleeve and gloves would have been a nice touch.
Yeah. I'm not saying it would have been better, but that could have been like a slightly different direction they could have gone with it to make it like.
Well, it would have made it even more ambiguous.
Right.
That it's not a white male driving it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Since I brought it up, now's as good a time as any to mention it. Cary Lofton is the driver of the truck. He is a stuntman. Who had previously worked well, and his career, just a quick rundown of his resume. He is in the Thunder Road, which was a Robert Mitchum movie about moonshine runners. He was an uncredited driver in the John Frankenheimer movie Grand Prix and Bullet and French Connection and Smokey and the Bandit. The, like, if you're going to make a list of movies with the best driving, like, boom, 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 boom. There they are. So he was.
Yeah. So it's nice that you bring up Bullet, which is, you know, widely renowned as one of the great chase sequences ever in film. The same camera car setup was used for Duel.
That got invented for Bullet, right?
It got invented for Bullet, and then they used the exact same camera car that was used on Bullet for this movie.
Yeah. Have you seen Bullet?
Yes.
I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
That I have a soft spot. And so if I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but basically if it's a movie made between like 1966 and 1975, like it doesn't matter what it is. I love it. But obviously the like the high point movies of that era are like I could just – you could take away every other movie in history and just like if I had to – you had to give me one decade of movies worth to watch for the rest of my life.
Just give me those two halves of decades.
65 to 75.
Yeah.
Or whatever, 74, you know, whatever.
Like absolutely.
There's a lot of meat in there.
Yeah.
And boy, Bullet, that's a winner right there.
Yeah.
French Connection, Grand Prix. Smokey and the Bandit, not so much, but I do like that movie. That's out of that. That's 77.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But bravo, Kerry Loughton.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So the gas station attendant, this guy's pretty terrible. He's like spilling gas all over the car.
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing I noticed. Like, yeah. Did he do it on purpose?
I don't even know if he's just like is there a mistake. Gas? Yep. Yeah. And he just like, it's like all over the, like.
Back in a day and age when everybody smoked cigarettes, although you never see that in this movie, do you? You see anybody smoking? Not even in the cafe scene?
I don't think there's anybody smoking in this movie.
Yeah. There's a weird dreamlike quality of this whole movie. Like, is anyone real? Is this a dream that Dennis Weaver is having?
I don't think so. But, yeah, so, yeah, he's terrible. He's spilling gas everywhere. And then we get Chekhov's radiator hose.
Explain.
Well, you know, like Chekhov's gun. The gun that happens that you see on the mantelpiece. We've done this before. Come on, man.
Sorry.
It's an old writing technique.
Oh, where you see something early in the movie and you have to.
And then it pays off later. So like Chekhov's gun comes from a play.
Like the air tanks in Jaws.
Like the air tanks in Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah, you touch these, they're going to blow up.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So this is Chekhov's radiator hose. Mm-hmm. No, not Chekhov from Star Trek. Nope. I know I've said that before, but it's a different Chekhov. Anyway, so you know the radiator hose is going to blow up in Act 3 because we're talking about it here. So I'm just throwing it out there. So
I fully admit I didn't make that connection when watching the movie, but now it makes perfect sense that his car –
I'm just saying it's a writing technique and it's our job as hosts to point these things out.
Yes.
So there it is.
I have the problem with this movie where I've seen it so many times that I'm not like critically – didn't we talk about this? We've probably talked about this before. Like a movie you've seen so many times, you like – you're almost like disassociated with. Like mm-hmm. you're not – like I'm not paying attention to it as much when I rewatch it. Rewatch it a few days ago. Like, oh yeah, this is the scene where that happened. This is the scene where his car blows up.
When I'm doing it specifically for this, I come into it like guns ablaze.
So what you're saying is you're better at this.
I won't say anything.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And this might be where we end this episode, but so he calls his wife. The best way I can say this, he then basically the fat lady from Jaws comes in to do her laundry and upstages him with her women's work, which is doing laundry, which I know.
Oh, because that's what his wife is doing when she's on the phone?
Well, she's kind of doing the kids. So his wife, what I'm trying to say is this is another demasculinization.
Yeah.
And please don't get mad at me saying that laundry is women's work. I know that men can do laundry. I'm saying in this day and age,
the movie is
this would have been a thought of as women's work, upstaging the man, and they open the door and like put him in the round.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
They put him in the round window of the washing machine. Like, this guy is not getting respect.
And he's got his leg up. And he's got his leg up on the counter, like, mm-hmm. just all the, like, it's like he has all the, like, look and feel of, like, a male. The movie's, like, painting these, like, broad stroke stereotypes yes. of what yes. women do.
Yeah.
And
what men do.
Right. And the framing where he's got his leg up on the counter and then she comes in and opens the door. Like,
yeah.
It's very heavy-handed, but it's heavy-handed to our, like, film eyes, you know? Sure. But it's not heavy-handed to someone just, like, watching it like, okay, so when's the truck coming back?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, what's happened with the truck outside?
Yeah. But
this is all kind of subtle things to demasculinize this guy, which is part of the theme. Yeah. So
the movie
that's
definitely,
why I'm bringing it up.
The movie definitely works with the conceit of, like, we're dealing with broad strokes, like male stereotypes.
And I don't know if it – I don't even know in the time that this was made, those would even be considered broad strokes.
Mm-mm.
I think they would be considered broad strokes just now.
Typical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This would be just kind of like, hey.
What do you think of the fact that they actually cut away to the wife in the living room? As a filmmaker, I might have made the choice to just never show the wife and kids.
I don't mind it locked
into his point of view.
I don't mind it. It's kind of the only time that happens in this entire film.
Yes, exactly. That's
so
why I bring it up.
Kind of weird, but I don't mind it either yeah. way.
You only cut away to it because it's a world he.
I think it's okay because we see him leave that suburban house. So then when we go back right. to it, I think it's okay.
And I'm going to get a little deep here. The whole movie is from his point of view. So because he's on the phone with them, what we're seeing there
could be his imagination,
his mind's eye sure. of what is happening over
which
there.
We certainly get that later right. too.
Yes. Yeah. That's a whole, I haven't like fleshed this out. I thought about it a lot before we recorded, but like I feel like there's like a novel you could write on like the themes and gender roles and masculinity and all the stuff going on in this movie. But I mentioned it earlier, just like, is he dreaming it? I'm not saying that that's what the movie posits, mm-hmm. but there, just the choices that Spielberg makes through this whole movie, the nightmarish quality, the close-ups, the framing, like all of this is done through.
I lost my shoe. Sorry.
I was just giving you some dead air to edit that out. All of the editing and cinematography choices and point of view, specifically point of view, is what this movie does to present it in a way where the lines between reality and not fantasy, but it's all in his mind's eye. Like, and another thing we can get into is the fact that he's always narrating.
For sure.
And we get his inner monologue.
Yeah.
But that's probably a great place to end this episode.
I think so. So, So that's Duel Part 1. And you can catch us next week.
For Duel Part 2.
Check out the PayPal. Like and subscribe. Tell a friend. That's the most important thing. Tell a friend to listen to us and get them started on season one. And hopefully they can catch up pretty soon. So thanks so much. And we'll see you next time right here on The Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.